Okay, I'm recording as well. Okay. good evening, everyone. So tonight we'll be continuing our discussion of Hilchos Beis HaKnesses. So we already started last week the discussion describing the various opinions regarding the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses, how to observe the Kedusha. So now we'll continue with the topic and discuss how you can deconsecrate, so to speak. What's the nature of selling a Beis HaKnesses? And sometimes you have that a community upgrades to a bigger Beis HaKnesses, or even sometimes they downgrade to a smaller Beis HaKnesses. Sometimes the demographics of a community change and the community picks themselves up and moves somewhere else, and the Beis HaKnesses is left behind. So the question becomes, what are the halachas surrounding selling a Beis HaKnesses, and what do you do with the money? What do you do with the actual Beis HaKnesses that was sold? And what's the nature of the deconsecration? So as we mentioned last week, most of these halachas are found in Maseches Megillah, and we cited the Tosfos Yom Tov, who explains that the reason why Rabbi Yehuda Nasi put all of these halachas into Maseches Megillah is because since Maseches Megillah discusses Kriyas Megillah, and along with Kriyas Megillah comes Kriyas HaTorah, so all the halachas of Kriyas HaTorah are also found in Maseches Megillah, and all of the Torah leanings for the various Yom Tovim are all listed in Maseches Megillah. So therefore, these kriyas are done in a Beis HaKnesses ordinarily, so therefore Rebbe chose Maseches Megillah to discuss all the halachas of a Beis HaKnesses. So on the outline, so I did it a little bit differently this time. I broke it down into paragraphs, into mini topics, into mini questions. So there are a few aspects here to analyze. The first question is, if a community decides to sell a Beis HaKnesses, so the question is, what is the status of the money, of the proceeds that the community receives in return for selling the building, for selling the Beis HaKnesses? So the Mishnah tells us the following. The Mishnah is in Maseches Megillah, Chaf Hei Amud Beis. The Mishnah tells us, B'nei Ho'ir Shemachru Rechoiva Shel Ir. So if the city, the community members, would sell a Rechoiva Shel Ir, which is basically an open area, the town square. So the town square had a minimal level of Kedusha. And the reason why the town square had a minimal level of Kedusha is because the Gemara in Maseches Tainis describes that if there would ever be a drought, so Beis Din would enact three groups of fasts. First, they would enact three fasts, Monday, Thursday, and the following Monday. And then if that doesn't work, if it's still, there's no rain, so then they would enact another set of fasts, Monday, Thursday, and Monday. And then if that doesn't work, they would have another set of fasts for 7 days, Monday, Thursday, Monday, Monday, Thursday, Monday, Monday. And they would take the Aron Kodesh out of the shul into the common square, the public square, and they would daven outside as if to say that we've tried everything else, now we're desperate, and we're going to exile ourselves, and this is going to be a symbolic exile, we're not going to be in the shul, we'll be outside, and we're davening outside in order to beseech Hashem directly, in order, as if to say, we've tried everything else. It's almost like Tachanun. Tachanun, the reason why we first start the Tachanun, and we put our head down, we semi-bow, and then we sit upright, and then we stand, is because we're saying, ba'anachto lo neda, because we don't know what else to do. In other words, we're supplicating to Hashem, so we try davening to Hashem, so to speak, in every position possible, because it's a way of saying that we're trying everything. We're trying to daven as much as we can. So the same thing was on the seven fasts, the last series of Tainesim, they would daven outside in the Rechoy Vishal Ir. So the Rechoy Vishal Ir has a minimal level of sanctity, because on occasion, not with any regularity, but on occasion they would daven outside. So the Mishnah tells us that if they would sell the town square, then you would be required to upgrade the proceeds. You can't just use the money for anything. You have to buy something higher. You have to be Malin Bakodesh. So the Mishnah tells us the order in the totem pole of Kedusha. So it says you sold the town square. You have to use the money to at least buy a Beis HaKnesses. A Beis HaKnesses is considered an upgrade to the Rechoy V'Shalia. If the community sells a Beis HaKnesses, then you would have to upgrade the proceeds. And the next level would at least be an Aron Kodesh, because an Aron Kodesh is a Tashmish Kedusha. So you can sell a shul and then use the money to buy an Aron Kodesh. If you sold an Aron Kodesh, Loichin Matpachos, you have to upgrade the money from that. You've sold something that's a Tashmishe Kedusha, so you'd have to buy something that's a Tashmishe Kedusha, which is the Matpachos, the mantle for the Sefer Torah, the material that they use to wrap the Sefer Torah in. Matpachos, if you sold the mantle of the Sefer Torah, so then Yikhu Svarim, you would have to upgrade the money and at least buy something higher, which would be Svarim. So those days, Svarim were Chumashim or Nevi'im and Ksuvim that were written with a kosher diyoy on a cloth. It's similar to some shuls now have haftoras like Sefer Yeshaya or Sefer or Eicha or like we know a Megillas Esther that are written bekashrus on a cloth. So if you sold the matpachais, which is Tashmishei Kedusha, the next level would at least be Svarim. They used to have Chumashim, not printed Chumashim that we have today, but they had Chumashim that were written, one of the five books of the Torah would be written on a cloth, or a Sefer Yeshaya, Nevi'im and Ksuvim. If you sold Svarim, which is Tashmishei Kedusha, then you would have to purchase a Sefer Torah. The only way up is to get a Sefer Torah. That's the only thing that's higher than Svarim. However, the Mishnah tells us the converse. If you would sell a Sefer Torah, then you're not allowed to go down. Ma'alam Mekodesh Ta'im Meridin. You can't purchase Svarim because Svarim is a notch below. If you would sell Svarim, like the Sefer Yeshaya, something written in a scroll on a cloth, Lo Yikru Matpachas, you can't go down. So you would not be able to purchase something lower in Kedusha, which is merely Tashmishei Kedusha, like a mantle for a Sefer Torah. If one sold a mantle for a Sefer Torah, they would not be allowed to buy an Aron Kodesh, which is a lesser form of Tashmishei Kedusha, and so on. An Aron, you can't purchase a Beis HaKnesses, you have to go up. A Beis HaKnesses, you wouldn't be able to purchase a town square. V'chein b'moisrayan, and the same thing applies to the leftover money. If, for example, you sold a mantle for a Sefer Torah where you have to use the proceeds to go up to purchase at least Svarim, even if you purchase some Svarim and you have some leftover money, you can't just say, well, I already purchased something higher. You have to use all the money for something higher. I wrote in the note here on the bottom something that the Gemara says. When the Mishnah says that you sold the Sefer Torah, you can't purchase Svarim, which means you would be able to purchase another Sefer Torah, the Gemara tells us that the Mishnah is not necessarily allowing you to do that. L'chatchila. The Gemara actually comes out, you're not supposed to sell a Sefer Torah for under any circumstances. There's only two exceptions. You can sell a Sefer Torah for Pinyin Shvuyin, or you can sell for Talmud Torah, or for Achnasas Kala to marry off a poor Yosem and Yosema. But the Mishnah is not condoning the sale of a Sefer Torah. The Mishnah is only telling us if one did sell, then you trigger the second halacha that the money has to be used to go up and not to go down. So the Gemara is telling us an important point that the Mishnah here is not necessarily condoning the sale of these items for any old reason. The Mishnah is telling us after the fact, if we did sell these items, it triggers the second halacha that the money has to be, you have to use the money for something higher and you can't use the money for something lower. And the Gemara leaves it as unresolved. Could you use the money for something equal? It says you can't go up. You could go up, you can't go down. What about something equal? That's left unresolved. But the Gemara is not telling us you're allowed to sell these items necessarily. The Gemara is simply telling us if one did, what do you do with the money? So the Mishnah tells us that if you sold a Davar Shebe Kedusha or even a Beis HaKnesses, which is being used for tefillah. So you have to use the proceeds for something that's mu'ullah, something higher, malin bakoidish, ve'ein moiridin. Now, there's an interesting machloikis in the Mishnah on Dov Chavzayin Omid Beis. Good. I sold the Beis HaKnesses, and I'm going to use the money for something higher. I'm going to purchase a Sefer Torah with the money of the Beis HaKnesses. So the Mishnah tells us, what's the status of the Beis HaKnesses now? What does the buyer do with the Beis HaKnesses? Does he have to observe any covet to the sold Beis HaKnesses? So there's actually a machloikis in the Mishnah on the Chav Zayin Amid Beis, what the loikeach, what the buyer should do with the purchased Beis HaKnesses, even though the community is using the money to go up. But what about the buyer's end? What is he allowed to do with this building? So the Mishnah actually cites a machloikis. Says the Mishnah, Ein moichrin es shel rabim liyachid. So this is the opinion of Rav Meir, that a community is not allowed to sell the Sefer Torah, to sell a Beis HaKnesses, excuse me, that's being used by a rabim, by a minion, and you can't sell it to an individual, even if he plans on using this building as his own personal Beis Medrash, or his own personal place to daven or to learn, because you're being moirid oisoy mikedusha. These are the words of Rav Meir. So it's fascinating that even after everything's said and done, that the community is going to take the money and they're going to use the money to buy something that has more kedusha than the Beis HaKnesses. In Rav Meir's opinion, the purchaser, it has to be equal, at least equal, for what it was being used for. The community would not even be allowed to sell the Beis HaKnesses that was being used for a minion to an individual. And the Gemara explains, because while it was in the hands of the minion, they were using it every day for a minion, and they would be saying Devarim Shepikdusha, they would be saying Kaddish and Kedusha in the Beis HaKnesses. Now that you sold it to an individual where there's not going to be a minion, he's not going to be allowed to say Kaddish or Kedusha in that room. So therefore, that itself, you're lowering the use of the Beis HaKnesses. So the community could only sell the Beis HaKnesses to at least a minion, that they'll continue using it as a Beis HaKnesses. Rav Meir is very strict. Rav Meir says that you can't even sell the shul for a mundane use. You can't even lower it down to a Beis Medrash for a private Beis Medrash, because you have to maintain what the use was until now. That's Rav Meir's opinion. And not only that, Rav Meir says something fascinating, that in order to show honor to the Beis HaKnesses, you can't even sell it lechlutin. You can't sell it decisively. You have to leave a clause that the community reserves the right to buy it back, even if they never plan on doing so. But they have to insert a clause that they have the right to return the money and purchase it back, to reverse the sale, just as a way of showing honor to the Beis HaKnesses, that they're not just giving it up indefinitely. They're not just giving it up decisively, but they feel a little bad about it. They're reserving the right to buy it back. That's Rav Meir's opinion. However, the Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say to Rav Meir, if you're going to be so particular that a rabim can't sell it to a yachid, then even a larger community, following your line of reasoning, a larger community should not be able to sell it to a smaller community. So imagine if in the city you have a lot of people daven in one area and then a smaller group daven in the second area. So the first group would not be able to sell the Beis HaKnesses to the smaller group, because the larger group, the Beis HaKnesses was being used beroiv am hadras melech. The Beis HaKnesses was being used, but with a crowd, with a tremendous crowd of people. And then you're selling it off now. It'll only be used with a simple minion, which is not going to have the quality of roiv am hadras melech. So the Chachamim say, according to you, Rav Meir, that you have to maintain the same level of kedusha. Following your logic, a rabin shouldn't be able to sell it to a smaller community, a smaller congregation, because it will not have the element of roiv am hadras melech. So the Chachamim say that there's no end. Just like you, Rav Meir, agree that you could sell it from a larger community to a smaller congregation, so too, says the Chachamim, you're allowed to sell the shul even for mundane practices, and you don't need to sell it even to a yachid. So we see from here, from this Mishnah, how sensitive we are to the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses, that Rav Meir and the Chachamim disagree, even when you're selling the Beis HaKnesses, and even when you're using the money to upgrade and to use the money for something greater, something higher, nevertheless, the Beis HaKnesses retains a certain status. According to Rav Meir, it should still be used as a Beis HaKnesses, albeit with a smaller congregation. And according to the Chachamim, no, you're allowed to sell it even to an individual. Now, the Chachamim, they agree partially to Rav Meir that you can't, the buyer of the building can't use the Beis HaKnesses, the former Beis HaKnesses, for four things. And the Poskim say it's not only these four, this is just the list, but we can, anything that's comparable to this, you wouldn't be able to sell it as a merchatz, a bathhouse, or a tannery. A tannery, they would use chemicals that were made from feces, from dog feces, so it was considered to be a repulsive occupation in those days. So a tannery, you can't convert a Beis HaKnesses to a tannery, you can't convert a Beis HaKnesses to a tefillah, to a base tefillah, a mikvah, where again, people are getting undressed. It's considered to be a degrading purpose vis-a-vis the former Beis HaKnesses, or to a Beis Mayim. A Beis Mayim would be like a public bathroom. You wouldn't be able to use the building for a public bathroom. So we have over here a Machlekes Rav Meir in the Chachamim. Rav Meir says that even after you sell the Beis HaKnesses and you are using the money for something higher, the Beis HaKnesses retains the full sanctity and it has to be continued to be used as a shul. So basically, according to Rav Meir, it's almost, we'll soon see the exception, but according to Rav Meir, the community's hands are tied. It's almost like once you designate it as a Beis HaKnesses, then once a Beis HaKnesses, it's always a Beis HaKnesses. That seems to be Rav Meir's opinion, and the money has to be upgraded, and the building has to be continued to be used as a Beis HaKnesses. That's Rav Meir's opinion, a very strict opinion. The Chachamim say no, that once you sell the Beis HaKnesses, as long as you upgrade the money, then the building can be used for mundane purposes, with the exception of these four things, or anything that would be similar to this, a bathhouse, a tannery, a mikveh, or a public bathroom. These things are things that the Beis HaKnesses would not be able to be used for. Now, Rashi...
Can we assume that when they say Beis HaKnesses, they're talking only to the makam, like the shul itself, where people dab, not a social hall?
Yeah, we're referring to, right, we're referring to the actual sanctuary. Correct. Thank you for that. We mentioned that last week also, that while the Beis HaKnesses is in use, so it's the sanctuary that we're discussing. That's what has the rules of the Beis HaKnesses. Now, Rashi explains the Shita of the Chachamim, so this would be item Vav. Rashi explains, why is it that the Chachamim hold, once you sell the Beis HaKnesses and upgrade the money, that the shul can be basically used for mundane purposes, with the exception of these degrading uses? So Rashi explains, for Rabbanan Amri, the Rabbanan say, Iika lemechash ben rav lema'at, if you hold like Rav Meir, that you can't sell it to a private person because it's no longer going to be used by a minion, so then you shouldn't be able, a larger congregation shouldn't be able to sell the Beis HaKnesses to a smaller congregation, because then you're downgrading from Roiv Am Hadras Melech. It's a bigger honor to the king, to Hashem, if it's being used by the multitudes. So says the Chachamim, Boloi Mishkachas Mechira Beis HaKnesses. And according to you, Rav Meir, you would never be able, practically speaking, you would never be able to sell a Beis HaKnesses. So El Aloi Hashina. So rather, this is the Chachamim's position. We're not concerned. Why? The Kivin the Shokil Dmei, because once the congregation took the money Umalahu Bikdusha Ma'ula, and they're using the proceeds for something higher. So then, call the boy lokeach of it, whatever the purchaser wants to do, he's permitted to do, with the exception of the Dalet Dvarim that it says in the Sefer that are listed in the end of the Mishnah, with the exception of those degrading uses, but otherwise you can use it for whatever you want. So the Poskim discuss, I actually saw that it happens all the time, but there was a community that sold the shul, and they were discussing, they were trying to ensure that the shul would fall into the right hands. So there was a discussion there, can they sell the shul to be used as a museum? Because the museum is a respectful use for the building. People come, it's a dignified use, they'll come, they'll look at the exhibits. So basically the Paiskim decided in that case that as long as they wouldn't be bringing in Avodah Zarah, or it wouldn't be used for any degrading use, that would be considered an appropriate use. So that would be the Rabbanan's opinion, that you can sell the shul, you have to upgrade the money, and the shul has to at least be used for a dignified purpose. You can't use it for the degrading purposes similar to a bathhouse or something of that nature. That's the Chacham. Now, is there any way out? Is there any way to completely deconsecrate the shul? So it's very interesting. The Gemara tells us there's a concept of the Zayin Tuvei Ho'ir, the seven officials of the city, the Tuvei Ho'ir, and like the council, the board of directors, b'maimid anshei ho'ir, in the presence of the entire community. So the Paiskim discuss that until now, we were talking about selling the Beis HaKnesses. Who is selling the Beis HaKnesses? Who exactly was selling the Beis HaKnesses? Who exactly was authorized to sell the Beis HaKnesses in the first place? So the Paiskim discuss that you sometimes have the board of directors. And the board of directors, they were not officially elected by the people to sell the Beis HaKnesses. They were appointed to maintain the Beis HaKnesses, to oversee the running of the Beis HaKnesses, the administrative or the upkeep, the dues, and so on. The membership, they were elected, they were authorized to run the Beis HaKnesses. But of course, as a last resort, the board of directors, they have the right to sell the Beis HaKnesses if they need to, if they come to that decision. Like any nowadays also, even in the civil law, if there's a nonprofit organization, so you're required to have a board of directors. The board of directors are authorized to make decisions regarding the organization, regarding the institution. Whoever elected them or whoever they're serving, they don't have to micromanage whatever decisions the board makes, but the board was not specifically authorized to sell. So we're discussing a case where they're allowed to sell the Beis HaKnesses because they have authority, but that was not really what their role was. However, if the community specifically appointed someone to oversee the selling of the Beis HaKnesses, where he was specifically authorized, that would be considered selling the Beis HaKnesses in the presence with the authority of the entire community, the entire membership. And then that would have the equivalence of the Zayin Tuvei Ho'ir b'maimid anshei ho'ir. Now, the Poskim discuss that the scenario of the board of directors making this decision behind closed doors to sell the Beis HaKnesses and nobody hears about it, that's what we've been discussing until now. However, if the Zayin Tuvei Ho'ir sell the Beis HaKnesses, they put up a notice and they inform the community of what they're planning, of their intentions. They plan on selling the Beis HaKnesses with transparency before the Anshei Ho'ir. The membership knows about it. They were forewarned. They were given a heads up. Everybody knows what the plans are. Everybody, probably there was some debate back and forth, but at the end of the day, everybody agrees to it. That has the status of selling the Beis HaKnesses b'maimid Anshei Ho'ir. So the question was asked just now, if this applies to Eretz Yisrael or only to Chutz La'aretz. So the Paiskim did not differentiate between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz at this point. We did mention last week that when you build a Beis HaKnesses conditionally, so there are those who say that the T'nai is only effective in Chutz La'aretz, not in Eretz Yisrael. This is talking about deconsecrating. This would apply even in Eretz Yisrael. This is not based on any stipulation that was made ahead of time. This is just the normal course of events that sometimes the demographics change and the community moves, and they decide to sell the shul. This would apply even in Eretz Yisrael. So now, the Gemara tells us, and what we're going to do tonight, we're going to discuss what the mechanics are behind this and how this actually works. But this is the fact. This is the setup that says the Gemara, Omar Rava, Loishanu Elishulei Machru Shivetuvio Ir B'maimet Anshuir. When are we restricted? When do we say what we've been saying until now? That the money has to be upgraded, and the shul itself, according to Rav Meir, has to be maintained as a shul, and the Rabbanon say you can't use it for the four things. When does this rule apply? Omar Rava, Loishano Ella Shaloi Makru Shivet Tuvio Ir Bemaimit Anshu Ir. Up until now, we were speaking when the board of directors, let's refer to them, they sold it with not in the presence of the city. They sold it just, they made a decision and they sold the shul. It was not done in the presence of the community, meaning the community wasn't given time to deliberate about it. They weren't given a heads up. The decision was made and the shul was sold. That's when you have to upgrade the money. But if it was a complete decision, they didn't sell the shul unilaterally. It was a community-wide decision. It was done in the presence, transparency of the community. So then, afilu lemishta beishechra. Even the Gemara says it in an extreme way. Even if they sold the shul to use the money to buy beer, lemishta beishechra, to use the money to buy drinks, they're giving everybody on the house. They're giving everybody a lechayim on the house. Even that is mutter, right? Obviously, it would be pathetic to sell a shul to use the money to buy beer. But the Gemara is telling us to the extent that there's no rule that you have to upgrade the money. If the entire community decided to sell the shul, then the money could be used for the most mundane purpose. Again, we're not discussing that you're allowed to sell a shul. We're discussing what the money would be used for. You have to justify the sale of the shul. But the money, there's no longer any din that the money has to be upgraded. Now, we're going to come back to this in a minute. If you notice, I put into brackets, ulemishtach beperi, and you can use the building to spread as a storage room, to store peris, to spread fruits, packages. You can just put boxes in the shul. That's in brackets. And we'll come back to what the significance of that is in a moment. Shaper dummy. So you see from here that when the Bnei Yair as a whole, when all the membership, when the community decides to sell the shul, the money is no longer restricted. The money could be used for whatever the people want. Now, what's the mechanism for this? What's the pshat? What difference does it make who sold the shul? And why is it a greater sale? Why is it more effective if the entire community is involved, if it was done with the full transparency of the community? So there's a very interesting machlekes between the Ramban and the Ran. They, overall, it's a similar idea, but there's a nuance here that's different, and it actually has a practical nafgamina lahalacha. The Ramban says the following. The Ramban says, this is item ches, how does it help if the entire community, we're referring, this is known as Zion Tuv Yo'ir B'maymid Anch Yo'ir. How does it help to sell a Beis HaKnesses? And why is it better if they sell it B'maymid Anch Yo'ir? So the Ramban says the following. His overall theory is that he compares it to a lulav after Sukkos, right? When the shul is being sold, it's like a lulav after Sukkos, or it's like your tzitzis when the garment is no longer wearable. The time for the mitzvah expired. Says the Ramban, a Beis HaKnesses asu oisoi ki tashmishei mitzvah. A Beis HaKnesses is tashmishei mitzvah. It was being used until now for a mitzvah. Kesukah is like a sukkah, or it's like a lulav. As long as the Beis HaKnesses was in use, maybe the Beis HaKnesses was in use for 40, 50, 60, 70 years, that entire time, the Beis HaKnesses is like a sukkah. It's being used for a mitzvah. What's the halacha with tashmishei mitzvah once the mitzvah expires? What happens to the sukkah after Sukkos? What happens to the lulav after Sukkos? So you put the panels in your garage. Says the Gemara, it's nizrakin le'achar mitzvasa. Tashmishei mitzvah are nizrakin. Now the simple translation, you can toss the tashmishei mitzvah. Now our minig is, we're going to talk about this, our minig is to treat the tashmishei mitzvah with respect. So for example, if the person's tzitzis are no longer wearable, so our minig is that we wrap the tzitzis up respectfully, and then we do put it into the garbage. We don't always do gniz, we don't bury it, but we do try to show it something. We don't put it just into the garbage alone. We wrap it up respectfully, we put it into a separate bag, we put it on the side, and the garbage man takes it. We do try to show some sort of respect to the fact that it was used in a mitzvah, but the Gemara tells us technically that tashmishei mitzvah are nizrakin la'achar mitzvah, and you can toss the mitzvah away once you finish the mitzvah. It doesn't have any sanctity. It was only tashmishei mitzvah. You finish blowing the shofar, you finish shaking the lulav, you finish with the sukkah. So the halacha is that you can just toss it. Now, bizman the mitzvah, this is the Ramban speaking, bizman the mitzvah, yesh behen kedusha shel kavod. So the Ramban sort of coins a new expression. He calls it kedusha shel kavod. It has a sanctity, but not a real sanctity. It's just it's a requirement to show honor to the mitzvah. Kedusha shel kavod. Like it says, and the examples he brings are fascinating. Asu lehartzos mois keneged ner Chanukah. When everybody knows that when you light your menorah on Chanukah, you're not supposed to use the menorah. You shouldn't count your money by the menorah, the Gemara tells us. And the Ramban's understanding of that halacha is because every mitzvah is like that. While nothing unique about the menorah, while you're engaged in the mitzvah, while the object is serving the function of a tashmishei mitzvah, of a mitzvah object, an object, a chefet shel mitzvah, you're not supposed to use it for other purposes. Another example, noi sukkah, also stopping mihen kol zayin, says the Ramban, that's the reason why you're not supposed to take the sukkah decorations down and use it for something else, because when it was designated for the mitzvah and it was engaged in the fulfillment of a mitzvah, it was beautifying your sukkah, so you're not supposed to take it down and take it out of that status for no reason. The Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos, in Bamei Madlikin, avuhain dekulhain dam shchita, that the father, the precedent for all of these halachas is dam shchita. This is fascinating. The Gemara tells us, and this is all the Ramban quoting the various Gemaras, v'shofach v'kisa. So the halacha is that if you shecht a bird, a chicken, so you shecht it, and then you cover the blood, right? Kisu yadam. So we make a drasha, b'meshe shofach v'chasa. How did you shecht it? How did you pour the dam? How did you spill the blood? You shechted it with a utensil. B'meshe shofach v'chasa. With what you used to shecht, that's similar to how you should cover the blood. In other words, the same way you shechted with your hand with a utensil, so too you should cover the blood using your hand or using a utensil. Shaloi yu mitzvahs bezuyas alav. You can't degrade the mitzvah. So for example, the Gemara tells us that the appropriate way to cover the blood is not to kick dirt on top of the blood. You shechted the chicken, the blood fell to the floor. You don't kick with your foot earth and cover the blood. It's a mitzvah. And you shouldn't do the mitzvah in a degrading manner. You should do the mitzvah in a respectful, noble manner. So, b'shofach b'kisa. You spill the blood and you cover the blood. Why is the pasuk putting the shchita and the kisui together? The same way when you shechted the blood, the chicken, you used a kli. So too, when you cover the blood, you should use a kli, or you can use your hand, but you shouldn't just kick earth on top of the blood. Shaloi yu mitzvahs bezuyas olav. You're not allowed to degrade the mitzvah. Says the Ramban, that's the reason why you can't count money in front of your Chanukah menorah. While the mitzvah is in progress, you're not supposed to use it for something else. While you're wearing your tzitzis, you're not supposed to use the strings of the tzitzis. You can't tie your wallet to the strings of the tzitzis. You can't use the strings for a degrading purpose. While it's engaged in the mitzvah, you can't do a degrading tashmish use with the mitzvah while the mitzvah is in progress. However, once the mitzvah is over, tashmishei mitzvah nizrakin, then you're allowed to toss the mitzvah because tashmishei mitzvah are nizrakin. Says the Ramban. The Ramban continues his thesis, applying this to Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, and this is how the Ramban explains everything that we've been discussing until now. Ulefikach, therefore, says the Ramban, Beis HaKnesses, Ashul, Kol Zman Shebnei Ho'ir, writes in Boy, as long as the community wants the shul, as long as the shul, so to speak, is in use, that's analogous to the Chanukah menorah that's burning, or that's analogous to the tzitzis, the kosher tzitzis that you're wearing, the shofar, the lulav on sukkahs, the sukkah, noigin by kedusha. And we had last week, afilu b'chorbanai. So if you recall, we mentioned last week that the Mishnah tells us, even if the shul is no longer in use, even if the shul is desolate, you still have to maintain the kedusha. So that's incumbent on the Ramban to explain. Why do I still have to observe Kedusha in the Beis HaKnesses if it's no longer being used? So it's fascinating how the Ramban explains this in line with his explanation, Sharei Adayin Le'Ovras Man Mitzvase, because you never formally ended the use of the mitzvah. Even if the shul is no longer in use because the community dwindled and there's no longer a minyan or whatever the explanation is, the shul is still considered a shul. You never formally declared the mitzvah to be over. V'roi lachser v'levnoisei, and the people are supposed, we're supposed to, our attitude should be, we're supposed to look at it, our attitude should be that we hope that we'll be able to rebuild the shul. If you recall last week, we discussed, Rabbi Yehuda says that when the shul is desolate, you specifically should not invest in upkeep. If weeds are growing, if grass is growing, you should leave it there because of agmas nefesh. You want that to inspire the passerbyers to say, oi, I remember when this was a glorious shul. Let's put effort in to restoring the shul to its former glory. So even when the shul is not being used, the attitude should be that we want to restore the shul to its former glory. And that's why you still can't use the empty building, even though it's no longer being used. We can't use it for degrading purposes because it's still considered as if the mitzvah is in progress, as if the mitzvah is still in use. The shul is still being used as a shul. Explains the Ramban, Hilkach, Kishemachru Zayin Tuvio Ir, Shaloim Baimin Anshu Ir, if the board, they make a unilateral decision to sell the shul, not the community didn't sign on it. The board of directors are selling the shul, whatever their reason is. So the community is not signing on. The board is selling the shul, but it's with the understanding that the community didn't buy into that. They still wish the shul would be maintained as a shul, so to speak. That's the way we look at it. So the mitzvah is still considered in progress. The community is only maskim to sell the shul. El shetachol beis haknesses al adamim. They want the money to replace the shul and to be continued being used as a mitzvah. So if just the council, if just the board of directors decides to sell the shul, the way we look at it is that the community didn't agree. So therefore, the mitzvah is still in progress. So the way to maintain that the mitzvah is still in progress, the way to have the kedusha shel kavod, the way to honor the mitzvah, because the mitzvah was never formally expired, you have to use the money to go up. We look at it as if the money, the proceeds, replace the shul. That's how the Ramban explains it. This explains why the money has to be upgraded, because it's as if you transferred the shul onto the money. The money represents the chifetz shel mitzvah. The money represents the mitzvah, and it has to be used up. It has to be upgraded because of malin bakoish. That's how we explain why the money has to be upgraded. However, says the Ramban, kishenimlechu bnei o'ir lemachro, but if the entire community signed on, all the stakeholders decided that it's time to sell the shul. You don't have to ask every single person, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, but if the board of directors, with full transparency, is selling the shul in front of everybody, and everybody got a chance to think and come to terms with it, the way we look at it, as if there's a formal declaration to terminate the mitzvah. Now it's as if Sukkos is over. The lulav is no longer a chevet shel mitzvah. Sukkos is over, the sukkah is no longer being used. Chanukah is over, the menorah is no longer being used. When the people agree to sell the shul, and you can even use the money to purchase beer, like the Gemara says, that they're selling the shul, everybody agrees to sell the shul, then it's mutter. Why? L'fisha avras man mitzvasa, because that's a formal declaration that the shul is no longer oimid to be used as a shul. The kedusha is removed, just like the sukkah and the lulav. Just like the sukkah and the lulav after Sukkos. So the Ramban, it's a beautiful explanation that we compare the Beis HaKnesses to an object that's being used for the purpose of a mitzvah, and it's all madregas, it's all levels. The way we look at it is, if just a small group who are authorized to do so sold the shul, we look at it like the mitzvah is still engaged. We gave them the right to sell the shul, but the money has to be upgraded because we're still engaged in the mitzvah. However, if everybody decides to sell the shul, all the stakeholders together agree to sell the shul, it's as if they formally declared the mitzvah is hereby over, and therefore the tashmishi mitzvah are nizrakin. Tashmishi mitzvah can be tossed, just like technically you can toss your lulav away after Sukkos is over, you can toss your sukkah away after Sukkos is over, the mitzvah is over, and therefore there's nothing left of the mitzvah, and that's why you can use the money for anything. The Ran, he disagrees to the mechanics of the Ramban. Ultimately it's similar, but he explains the mechanics in two steps. The Ramban says like this, and we actually quoted this Ran last week, that the Beis HaKnesses u'dekavosei, the Beis HaKnesses and anything similar to Beis HaKnesses, Beis Medrash, Beis HaKnesses, kiven she'ikru asir lomer by davar shebekdusha, since the shul was designated to say davar shebekdusha, to sanctify Hashem's name, we get together, we say Kaddish and Kedusha, Shmoneh Esrei, we say Dvarim shebekdusha in the Beis HaKnesses. So the Ramban says a very powerful statement, hetilu by chachamim kedusha midevrehem. So the Ramban, the Ran argues on the Ramban fundamentally that it's not a mitzvah. A Beis HaKnesses is not merely a mitzvah that when the mitzvah is terminated, you can toss the mitzvah. A Beis HaKnesses has a kedusha midevrehem. And we mentioned this last week, that it's like the Beis HaKnesses is a miniature Beis HaMikdash. It's as if it has kedusha. It's rabbinic. The Ran's opinion is that it's rabbinic, but it has kedusha. And it's interesting how the Ran puts it. Why does the Beis HaKnesses have kedusha? Because we recite Dvarim Shebi Kedusha in the Beis HaKnesses. Because we say Kaddish, because we say kedusha, because we sanctify Hashem's name publicly in the Beis HaKnesses, that infuses the Beis HaKnesses with kedusha. Now that the Beis HaKnesses has kedusha, you have to deal with the kedusha. It's not just a lulav that doesn't have kedusha. It has kedusha like something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So says the Ran, afilu hisnu olav zayin tuvio ir b'maybet akshu ir, even if everybody agrees to sell it, the Ran is taking issue with the Ramban, e efshir shetifka kedushasay bikdi, you can't remove the kedusha with nothing, without replacing it with something else. Imagine if something belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, it has kedusha. If you misappropriate the funds of the Beis HaMikdash, you are moil behektish. You have to bring a carbon me'ila. So says the Ram, the shul has kedusha, rabbinic kedusha. You can't just wave a magic wand and remove the kedusha. The kedusha has to be transferred the same way any kedusha has to be transferred. So says the Ran, even if everybody agrees that it's no longer going to be used as a shul, too bad, it has kedusha. So efshir shetifka kedusha bikdi, you can't remove the kedusha without replacing it with something else. Mipnei kavod hakedusha sheyesh bo, because of the honor that the kedusha deserves. So he uses the same expression as the Ramban, but it's clear that he has a deeper understanding that there's actually a kedusha that was infused into the building. Miu, however, says the Ran, la'achar shehetilu kedushasei al adamim. So what the Chachamim gave the community the ability to do was the following. You can transfer the kedusha from the shul onto the money. Now, we look at the kedusha on the money as if it's klisha mekedushas Beis HaKnesses. It's a whole process. The Beis HaKnesses itself was used for Dvarim Shebekdusha. It was used to sanctify Hashem's name. There's like a Kedushas Haguf. It's like a carbon. It's like it has intrinsic Kedusha in the shul. When you transfer the Kedusha of the shul onto the money, so you're not removing it with nothing, you're transferring it onto something tangible, that money was never used as a shul. So immediately, says the Ran, the Kedusha itself was downgraded from Kedushas Haguf to Kedushas Damim. It's like learning Kaddish. From something that was intrinsically Kaddish because you used it to sanctify Hashem's name, it was transferred onto money, and now it's only Kedushas Damim. Now it only has the status of a monetary Kedusha. And that Kedusha, naturally, is weaker than the Kedusha of the actual Beis HaKnesses. They gave you the ability to transfer it onto money, and then Memela, naturally, is going to have less kedusha. Because this money was never actually used for Dharm Shavik Dusha. And says the Ran, another reason why the money is less kaddish now than the actual shul was, because the kedusha is a kedusha shniya. It's a secondary kedusha, and that's always weaker than the first kedusha. So says the Ran, Ben shemachru shivi tuvi u'ir b'mayim anshu u'ir, or shaloi b'mayim anshu u'ir, whether the entire community was involved in the sale or not, you have to transfer the kedusha onto money. You have to replace the shul with something else. You have to remove the kedusha by transferring it onto the money. And here's the difference between the Zion Tuvio Ir with the community or the board of directors without the community's involvement. The Rabbanan gave the entire community the ability to remove the kedusha from the money. So it's interesting, you can't remove the kedusha without replacing it onto anything else from the shul itself. Because the shul is as if it has kedushas haguf, as if it's intrinsically kaddish. That's a real kedusha. It was used to sanctify Hashem's name. What you could do is you can transfer it onto money because you're transferring the kedusha onto something tangible. You're not just going poof to the kedusha. Then the kedusha has been lessened, has been diminished because it's only on the money or on whatever you use to transfer. And now the entire community can decide to remove that kedusha. That could be removed memela, without replacing, because you have to first go through the process of diminishing the kedusha. So the Ramban says that when everybody decides to sell the shul, what you've done is you formally declared that the mitzvah is over. The shul doesn't have any kedusha. The shul is analogous to a lulav. It has tashmishei mitzvah. When the community decides as a whole to sell the shul, everyone, all the stakeholders, what they've done is they formally declared that the mitzvah is terminated. We finished using this building as our shul. It's like Sukkot is over. It's no longer being used as a mitzvah. Once it's no longer being used as a mitzvah, then you can toss it. That's it. The money has no kedusha. The shul has no kedusha because it's tashmishi mitzvah. Tashmishi mitzvah is rocket. The Ran argues on the Ramban. The Ran says that the Beis HaKnesses has kedusha. It's higher than just the lulav. It has actual kedusha. Why does the Beis HaKnesses have kedusha? Because we say Dover Shepik Dusha in the Beis HaKnesses, because we sanctify Hashem's name in the Beis HaKnesses. That infuses the very building with a kedusha. Says the Ran, you can't just remove kedusha without replacing it. You can't be mafkia the kedusha bigdi. You can't remove it without replacing. So there has to be a process. You have to transfer the kedusha from the shul over to the money. That's something that we can do, apparently. Once we do that, the kedusha was all automatically diminished because the money was never actually used as a shul at this point, because it's something new. It's a secondary kedusha. And that, the Chachamim gave the entire community the ability to remove that kedusha. That's how the Ramban explains it. Or the Ran explains it, excuse me. The Ramban says that we simply declared the mitzvah to be over, and the Ran, he describes that it's a whole process that you have to transfer the kedusha to money, and then you can remove the kedusha. Now, there's a very practical difference between the Ramban and the Ran. According to the Ramban, you can even give the shul away. If the community decides that the building is obsolete, they're moving, and they all decided to give the shul away, there's no kedusha here. You can simply declare that you've terminated the use of the shul, and you can simply give the shul away, because it's like Sukkot is over, that's it. It doesn't have to be transferred on to anything else. But according to the Ran, that the Beis HaKnesses has a literal kedusha, you must go through this process of transferring the kedusha onto a secondary item, and only then can you remove the kedusha from the secondary item, because the secondary item never had inherent kedusha. It only had kedushas damim, and that's something that you can remove bichdi. So, for example, imagine if a community is having trouble selling the shul. So, according to the Ramban, they can simply declare the mitzvah is over, and then they can walk away from the shul. But according to the Ran, the shul has kedusha, and it's impossible to remove the kedusha without transferring the kedusha first to something secondary. So I imagine that you have to do a sale, sell the shul for a dollar. Somebody would have to put up at least a dollar, transfer the kedusha onto the dollar, and therefore then you can be mafkia the kedusha from the dollar. So according to the Ramban, you can simply declare the mitzvah over, but according to the Ran, you would have to go through the process of selling the shul and transferring the kedusha onto a secondary item, and only then could the entire community, all the stakeholders, remove that. Okay. That discusses the money. What about the building now? So we've learned that when the board of directors sells the shul, they have to use the money to upgrade. And the shul itself, we have to observe a certain level that you have to use it for a dignified use. It has to be used for a respectful use. What about when everybody decides to sell the shul? So the Rosh and the Rambam, and this is how it's Paskin in Shulchan Aruch, and this is why we sometimes hear that a community moved, they sold the shul, and nobody cares what the shul is being used for. Sometimes the shul is even sold to a church. The shul is being used by a church. It's very common because the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, in the name of the Rosh and the Rambam, that if the entire community decides to sell the shul, even the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses itself was paka, and you can even use the building for the four things that we mentioned before, the tannery, the bathhouse, the bathroom, like we described before. That's the opinion of the Rambam and the Rosh. And this is how it's Paskin in the Shulchan Aruch. This is what we alluded to before, that when we cited the Gemara on the first page, and in item Zion, we said that if the entire community sells the shul, the money could be used to purchase beer. And I pointed out that in the brackets, there was a girsa, Lemishtach Bei Peri, that you can even use the building as a storage house. That girsa supports the Rambam and the Rush. If everybody agrees to sell the shul can even, we don't care what you use the building for anymore because the mitzvah was terminated and that's it. You can use the shul for whatever you want. Everybody agreed to sell the shul. The money can be used for what you want, whatever you want. The building can be used for whatever the purchaser wants because everything is over. That's the Rosh and the Rambam. However, the Ravid, back to item Yud Aleph, the Ravid argues, the Ravid holds that the four no-nos, the four things that we said before, the bathhouse, the tannery, etc., the degrading uses are even if everybody decides to sell the shul, nevertheless, you have to maintain. So according to the Ravid, it's impossible to sell a shul to a church. According to the Rosh and the Rambam, the way it's Paskin in Shulchan Aruch, you could. Lechatchila, it's better to observe, it's better in deference to the Ravid, it's obviously nicer to use the shul. That's why we mentioned before, the Paskin discuss, is selling the shul to a museum as some kind of landmark? Is that a respectful, dignified way to maintain the dignity of the shul? So that's why the Paiskim were discussing that, because even though everybody agreed to sell the shul, nevertheless, you have to keep some respectful use of the shul. That's the Ravid's opinion. But if all else fails, you can rely on the Rosh and the Rambam, and you can even sell the shul for any other purpose. Someone asked, how many people do you need for the Zion Tuvio Ir? So we mentioned this before. If the committee was specifically appointed by the members of the community, the members of the shul, to sell the shul, then there's no amount of people. It can even be one person because they were officially appointed to sell it. I would imagine that's usually the case. A scenario where the board of directors, everybody wakes up one morning and the shul is boarded up because the board of directors decided to sell the shul. That's probably a very unusual scenario. Usually when the shul is being sold, everybody knows about it. And usually they appoint a committee by the members of the shul to sell the shul. So ordinarily, if the person was actually authorized to specifically sell the shul, then that counts as if it's being sold by everybody. So then there would be no requirement. The Paiskim discussed today how we would apply the scenario of just the board of directors selling the shul. Do you literally need seven people? Seven people might be when it's a community shul. If it's a smaller, if it's specifically a shul, then the halacha would be perhaps you only need three people. The Paiskim discussed that, but it's not so negative, it's not so relevant because usually when we're selling a shul, when we come to that, whoever is actually affecting the sale was authorized by everybody to do so. So that has the equivalency of the Zion Tuvio Ir. Usually when, I would imagine in our day and age, when a community decides to sell a shul, it would always have the status of being sold with the full transparency of the Zion Tuvio Ir, with the Anshei Ir. The Rambam says the shul can now be used for whatever you want because it was totally sold. And that's the opinion of the Rosh, and it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch like that. However, the Ravid argues. And that would depend on the girsa we had earlier, with that girsa we had in the brackets, whether you can use the shul for whatever you want after. That's what that girsa, that's what that text in the brackets would depend on, if you hold like the Rambam or like the Ravid. How do we explain the argument between the Rambam and the Ravid? We paskin like the Rambam that you can use the shul for whatever you want if everybody agreed to the sale. So perhaps we can entertain that the Rosh and the Rambam, they hold like the Ramban, that the shul is only a mitzvah. It doesn't have any inherent kedusha. So once everybody decides that the mitzvah is over, you can toss the shul and there's no restrictions. Perhaps we can say that the Rambam and the Rosh hold like the Ramban, that the shul doesn't have any kedusha. Once they finish the mitzvah, you can toss the shul and you can use it for whatever you want. If everybody agrees to do the to sell, it's as if the mitzvah is over, it expired, and therefore you can toss the shul. Perhaps the Ravid holds like the Ran, that the shul had kedusha because you said dvarim shebekdusha in the shul. So maybe the shul is more than merely tashmishay mitzvah. Maybe the shul to begin with, is more than just a lulav or more than just a sukkah. The shul had kedusha. So perhaps we can say that the Ravid holds, even if you did go through the process of transferring the shul over to the money, perhaps there's some residual kedusha left over on the shul, and that would prevent you from using the shul for a degrading purpose. By the way, when it comes to a carbon, a sacrifice, it's also like that. If you designate an animal to be a sacrifice in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, and the animal develops a blemish, so the halacha is you're allowed to transfer the kedusha onto the money and purchase another sacrifice. And you can shech the first animal and eat it. But there is a residual kedusha that remains on the first animal, and you wouldn't be able to work with the animal, you wouldn't be able to shear the animal, you can only shech it and eat it. That's it. You have to observe a dignified use with the animal. So the precedent is there that if something had kedusha, even after you transferred it over to the money, the halacha would be that it has some residual kedusha afterwards. So that would be a way to explain the machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid. The Rambam holds, similar to the Ramban, that it was only a mitzvah. It never had kedusha in the first place. Once you decide the mitzvah is over, you can toss the shul. However, according to the Ravid, like the Ran, it has kedusha. Since it had kedusha, even after you redeem and transfer the kedusha onto the money, perhaps a residual kedusha remains in the shul, similar to a carbon, and therefore the halacha would be that you can't use it for a degrading purpose. The Bir Halacha, the Chafetz Chaim in the Bir Halacha, has a fascinating insight that if you take note, the Ravid holds that even after you finish a mitzvah, you can't use the object of a mitzvah either for degrading purposes. So the Gemara says something which is a bit ambiguous. The Gemara says, Tashmishay mitzvah are nizrakin. You can toss Tashmishay mitzvah. That's the expression of the Gemara. We've been interpreting that to mean that when the mitzvah is over, you can do whatever you want with the object of the mitzvah. Tashmishay mitzvah nizrakin. The Ravid interprets Tashmishay mitzvah nizrakin, that you can toss it, it doesn't require geniza. It doesn't have to be buried. You can toss it and let it just deteriorate on its own. Let it break down and deteriorate on its own. But you can't use it for degrading purposes. So the Bir Halacha has a very insightful, he has a brilliant insight that the Ravid is actually consistent, even if we don't ascribe to the Ravid that the shul had kedusha. Even if we treat the shul as a lulav, the Ravid would still say that when the mitzvah is over, you can't use the lulav for a degrading purpose. So the Ravid anyway would say that you can't use the shul for something, for the four items, the four no-nos, because once the shul was used as a mitzvah, you can never use the mitzvah, the object, for a degrading purpose. So we don't even have to say that the Ravid holds that there's a kedusha in the shul. Nizrakim just means that it ends by itself, that it just deteriorates by itself. And the Bir Halacha even points out an inconsistency in the Shulchan Aruch himself, because the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Tzitzis, when the mitzvah is over, the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Ravid that we should show a minimal respect to the tzitzis, even though the mitzvah expired. But when it comes to the shul, as we mentioned, the Shulchan Aruch paskens like the Rush and the Rambam, that you can literally use the shul for whatever you want. Why would a shul be worse than Tashmishei Mitzvah? So the Bir Halacha actually asks this as a question, that there's a certain inconsistency in the Shulchan Aruch himself, because when it comes to mitzvahs, the Shulchan Aruch says, the Shulchan Aruch insists that you should respect the object after the expiration of the mitzvah. And when it comes to the shul, the Shulchan Aruch says that when everybody decides together to sell it, then it gets completely deconsecrated and you can use it for whatever you want. We can understand, perhaps if the community as a whole deconsecrated, completely decided to sell the shul, they were mafkia, they completely removed the shul from its status, we understand it. But there is a certain element of inconsistency here, because the Ravid who says you can't use the tzitzis for mundane purposes, even after the mitzvah expires, he's the one who says you can't use the shul either for mundane, for degrading purposes. So there is sort of like a split between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ravid from Hilchos Tzitzis. Okay, but that's the halacha. The halacha is that you could use the building once everybody decides to sell it. You can use it for whatever the purchaser wants to use it for. But as mentioned, the Bir Halacha says it's best to be strict in accordance with the Ravid, especially because when it comes to Hilchos Tzitzis, we paskin like the Ravid that the object should be maintained some minimal level of respect. So that's basically the scoop when it comes to selling a basic nesses. There's a small point here that the Gemara in Megillah says that a basic knesses of a krach, of a metropolis, a big city, a Manhattan, a big city. If you have a basic knesses in a big city, a city in Yerushalayim, a metropolis, a big international city where people are coming from all over to use the shul, so that can't be sold at all, period. And there are different explanations for that. Some say because the assumption is that people have donated money from all parts of the world to build this shul. It's an international shul. So there is no membership. There is no finite, there is no defined membership. It belongs to the whole world. Similarly, some of Harshim explained that when the community built this international shul, it was designated, it was dedicated, I should say, to the entire world. So at the end of the day, it belongs to the entire world. And this small committee that's running the shul, the entire world is not kafuf, don't have to submit themselves to the decision. They're not subject to the decision of this small little council. The whole universe doesn't have to turn over backwards just because this little community decided to sell the shul. It's an international shul. It's like public property. That's how some of Horsham explained that halacha. And others say, Tosfos says, that when the shul is used internationally, it has a higher level of kedusha that can't be removed, period. So there is such a thing as a shul that could never be sold. And there was a Chassam Sofer who once described that a community moved. He considered that shul to be a Beis HaKnesses of a krach. And he insisted that they put a fence around the property. They don't allow anybody to trespass on the property because that shul is stuck forever. It has kedusha and nobody is authorized to sell that shul. Most poskim say that nowadays we don't have this scenario because there's no such thing nowadays in our day and age of a shul where people are giving money internationally to build the shul and guests are coming from all over and they're spending long periods of time in that city using the shul. We don't have such a scenario. So it could be you'd have when you have an internet, a landmark, a national landmark, where you wouldn't be able to sell. But nowadays, the shuls that are built nowadays, I was thinking, even for example, my parents live in Boca, so they describe to me that people come, the snowbirds come from New York and they spend time in Florida. But there's a membership. There's a membership. Those people that come for 6 months a year, they're expected to pay their membership dues. Not all do, but they are expected to pay. There's a finite membership in the shul. There's no such thing nowadays, by and large, with few exceptions, there's no such thing as a shul today that has an undefined international ownership. So most poskim would assume that nowadays the shul belongs to the users of the shul, the board of directors with the membership, and as long as the shul is sold by in transparency of the membership, it will have the status of the Zayin Tuvio year, B'mayim in Hagshu year, and the halachas that we've mentioned, that we've been describing, would apply. According to the Rush, not only can the money be used for mundane purposes, even the building can be used for mundane purposes, and according to the Ravid, it deserves the respect of being a former shul, and we would have to ensure that the shul, at least as much as we can, is maintained some level of dignified. It should be sold to a museum or some public group, or some perhaps a public office or something that's being used in a respectful manner. Again, the halacha follows the Rambam and the Rush, but it's better, it's good, if possible, to accommodate the Ravid's opinion as well. Yasha Koyach, everybody.
This conference is no longer being recorded.
Shkoyach.